and ever, okay? Even during Father Conklin's period, which I talked to you about, Father Conklin is a real unsung hero because were it not for people like him and like Archibald Moll Ramsey and others...
And Lindbergh. All the men that Roosevelt most hated.
Well,
because Roosevelt tried to shut up Father Conklin. He regarded him, along with Lindbergh, America's hero, as his greatest enemy.
Without these men, today's fight would not have been possible, and without people like Henry Ford. Now, I tried to make a point about Ford's trust. The Ford trust now is controlled by Zionist Jews. They have stolen his heritage from him.
Yeah, Henry Ford II set up factories in Israel.
Yes. Yes. What are we to do, James? I mean, you know, what are we to do when I look at these facts and I try to share them with an audience? What are we to do as righteous and caring humans, wanting a world that we can bequeath to our next generation? What are we to do to fight this other than tell everyone we can?
It's easier to diagnose a disease than to find a cure for it.
You're right. Sadly, that is exactly right statement. However, I believe a groundswell is beginning to form here. I sense it in my deepest moments of quiet. I see that there is a groundswell around the world where people have had enough, and they don't even know what they've had enough of. They just have had enough.
I think Muslims who have experienced Zionism in its always naked brutality, they are the ones maybe who can take the lead in this. The drawback I find with Muslims is they haven't read sufficient on the matter. I know that Mein Kampf has been translated into Arabic, and the Protocols in Arabic is one of the most popular books in the Middle East. But there are hundreds of texts. I mean, we need to translate books like Yockey's Imperium into Arabic so that they can understand the full nature of the conspiracy.
Well, we need people like Archibald Moll Ramsey's book circulated far and wide, and I'll tell you why. His book is short and sweet. It is 120 pages.
The Secret War. He was the MP for Peebles, where my parents used to go for their holidays during the Second World War when you couldn't get abroad. And he spent the war years in prison under 18B.
Well, it's called The Endless War, and yes, you're right. And
Endless War, that's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did is in a very short text, in a very clearly written text, he's not a floral writer. He is a very, very deliberate writer. He spelled out the conspiracy of his day in no uncertain terms. And the reason why I enjoy promoting his book is because it doesn't take a lot of time out of your world to understand the conspiracy. And I also ask people to listen to, among other people, but listen to Benjamin Friedman, who was absolutely spot on with his assertions about this group and how desperate they were going to make our world become. And
you've named one book which should certainly be translated into Arabic. And another one I think that should be translated into Arabic is Admiral Dombey's book, From Admiral to Cabin Boy. Now, you know, the typical Victorian success story was in the opposite direction. You began as a cabin boy, you ended up as an admiral. Well,
yes.
He pointed out how he, from an admiral, was reduced to the status of a cabin boy when he was put in prison under 18B, and he had to swap out his own cell and do all these menial and degrading tasks. However, this book, he put his finger on it, and you know, admirals, well, all seamen, are great raconteurs. They're very good at telling a yarn, because it's part of the forecastle culture, you know, that sailors sit with each other and they swap yarns. And they've got this gift for vivid expression. And he invented a phrase called jute mats. For instance, he says regarding the Second World War, he said, England didn't want it, but jute mats wanted it, so we got it. Now, jute mats is a phrase that he has coined from Judaism and Freemasonry. Because, you see, the Jews, although they they undoubtedly are at an advantage over the Gentiles in that they are very cohesive, and though they quarrel amongst themselves, they present a united front to the Gentile world. Nevertheless, there is one thing they lack, and this applies also to Israel. Now, if we look at Israel, we see it's got everything. They have the Israelis, they have the brains, they have the intelligence, they have the capital, they have the technology, but there is one thing they lack to hold down the whole Middle East, and that is manpower. Now, this is what applies in the case of Captain Ramsay's phrase, and it's why I cited it, Judmas, because the Freemasons, they are the foot soldiers of the Jews.
Well, yes, and you take a look at King Abdullah's father, who was the leading Mason in the Middle East when he was alive, and of course, you know, you can go on and on. I mean, we've got leadership across across Islam that is in the hands of these criminals, don't we, Yaakov?
Oh, yes. Every member of the late King Hussein's family was a Mason.
That's right.
Now, I read a book by General Ludendorff, The Destruction of Freemasonry Through Exposure of Its Secrets. And he quotes in this book the Grandmaster of the Kilwinning Lodge, who said that if the Kaiser had been a Mason, the First World War would never have taken place. Now, this really startled me, because the Kilwinning Lodge is the lodge to which my father belonged. You know that Freemasonry is, is Scottish to the core. And I only wish that he were alive, that I could ask him about this. And I still don't know how my father got into that lodge, because it's the lodge to which the aristocracy belong, and our family is merely middle class. But it shows the tremendous power of Freemasonry, that somebody like General Ludendorff, one of Germany's two greatest generals during the First World War, could attribute the fact that that war broke out because the Kaiser was not a Mason and was not therefore not privy to their conspiracies.
Well, you know, when you take a look at the Grand Orient tradition and its seeding to the Italian Grand Orient Lodge and then Salonika, Greece.
I'm glad you brought that up, because, of course, yeah, this is the whole background to Mustafa Kemal.
Right.
The Young Turk movement was Masonic. It was started in Salonika, which was the principal Jewish center of the Balkans, and it was directed from Italy by the Grand Lodge of Italy. And
Italy
when
Italy's lodge was directed from the Grand Orient of Paris.
Of Paris, yes, which is the most powerful lodge in the whole world. And when Sultan Abdul Hamid was overthrown, he was not overthrown in a popular revolution. It was a coup d'etat. The Third Army Corps of Salonika marched on Istanbul, first of all to impose the constitution on Sultan Abdul Hamid II, and appoint a cabinet which was exclusively drawn from Masonic circles, and then, not content with that, the same people deposed him, and this cleared the way for Mustafa Kemal. Now, Mustafa Kemal's own background is suspicious. Although his sister, who was alive until a few years ago at 90 odds, because, you know, Turks have the secret of longevity, was a very devout Muslim, the sister and the Mustafa Kemal are from two different mothers, and Mustafa Kemal's mother was Dolmetsch. You know what that means, don't you?
Absolutely. And
well, there we are.
Ataturk,
Jews going back to Sabbatai Zvi in the 17th century.
That's right, Sabbatai Zvi and the Sabbatean movement. But you also have to understand that at the same time there was a parallel revolution going on in Russia. And in fact, Zabotinsky and Carasso, who were both very prominent in both the Italian Lodge and both getting directions coming out of New York City and London, were involved in both the Russian and the Ottoman Empire's demise. And these people were working these things in in great detail at that time in history. And now
Jabotinsky was the most violent of all the Zionists. I mean, he was a murderer. You are right. People assign the Balfour Declaration to Arthur Balfour. But in fact, the real author of the Balfour Declaration was James Malcolm, who, in spite of his Gentile name, was a Persian-born Jew who was working in the Foreign Office, and it was really he who drafted it. And the Balfour Declaration was a bribe to bring America in on the side of the of Britain in the First World War in 1916, at a point when Britain was on the point of losing the war.
That's right, and now, and in fact, what ended up happening was these people had direct contact with Baruch and Morgenthau and Brandeis over in America, and they were in charge of what was happening to President Wilson, who was having extramarital affairs and every other kind of intrigue, and he was also involved in Freemasonry, and he sold out the American public. He at the same time he was responsible for organizing the implementation of the Federal Reserve. So basically, at that time, we lost
1913 the creation of the Federal Reserve Board. Yes,
that's right. So we lost full control of our world. It was really the full demise of our futures was at this period. And if you want to know why we are having these problems today, they were really after the Basel Switzerland 1897 meeting. They really began to ramp up their plans for world domination, and what we're seeing today is the fruition or the full fruit bearing of this criminal conspiracy that started at that time. But these people have been involved in intrigues for hundreds of years.
Well, it goes back, at least in the case of England, to the time of Cromwell and Manasseh Ben Israel.
That's right.
You see, we were taught in school the history of the English Civil War. But nobody mentioned that Cromwell was bankrolled by the Jews of Amsterdam. And after the revolution had taken place, or the Grand Rebellion, as it used to be called in the history books, before they chose the neutral term civil war, the country was bankrupt because it was had been ravished by civil war. And Charles the First court, which was the most glittering in Europe, Charles the First had the largest collection of Renaissance paintings in Europe. All this had to be sold off to defray the costs of the war, the loans that had been given to Cromwell by the bankers of Amsterdam. And they got in again in 1685, when James the Second and Seventh was dethroned and fled to France, and overcame King Billy William
of Orange,
and his entourage of Jewish bankers, and this is how the Bank of England was set up. So, in fact, Holland was the first capitalist country in the history of the world, and England was the second.
Well, and actually, Holland fell because of the ejection of these criminals from Spain. And when they were leaving Spain, they went to both Paris and into Amsterdam. And of course,
yes,
they set up shop. And now, you see, this is not as much a mystery to people who are willing to spend the time and look at it. And once we can figure out how they've done this, it's time now to say, okay, spread this word, tell others how this happened to us. And then we maybe collectively can begin to formulate or foment our own reversal of these crimes and get ourselves back into the position of taking control back from these criminals.
Well, this is what you're doing through interviewing me tonight, because you can bet I wouldn't be interviewed by the BBC, would I?
We're better than BBC.
Or CNN.
Well, no, we're better than BBC and CNN on CII because we tell the truth here.
Yes, and the truth is often unpalatable. And you don't find it in the history books, because these history books are written by the court historians of the British and American establishments. They owe their chairs to them. They're certainly not going to tell us the truth.
I'm honored to be able to be a truth teller on CII. I must tell you, Yaakov, because... for me to be able to do this in this in this median and to be telling these kinds of facts to such a large and diverse audience across Pan Africa and America and Europe, it's an honor for me. And I am honored to have had you on for this, what is now turning into be about 50 minutes. You know, this programming started a little bit late, so we're going to run over just a tad here. I do want to ask a couple of new questions to you. One of them is, I would like to have you back on other broadcasts because your historical reach is impressive to anybody who listens. And so when we start dissecting these issues, it's good to have somebody with your knowledge. I mean, I've only been fighting this battle for 5 years, Jacob. I did not get involved in this prior to that. I'm a quick study, though, as you can tell. But the battle is for me, is starting to really hot up because I think the world is at a point right now. It's an inflection point. We're at a point right now where either we're going to lose miserably or we're going to take it all back. I believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what, personally, what more I could do to make this a larger message except to keep bringing on people who know the story. Now, of course, I'm going to ask you when we're off air if there are others you could maybe put me onto that could extend this history. You know, you're friends with David Pidcock, who, of course, has his in his own right has been quite a historian, and I'm hoping to have David on in the near future as well.
He's very strong on finance and also Freemasonry.
Well, yes, and he was part of the gang that went over to see Mahathir Mohamad. I've already mentioned that on air, trying
yes.
to keep him out of the clutches of the World Bank and IMF.
Yes. And Mahathir, he was quite open about it. He said it was Soros who brought down the Malay economy.
That's right. That's right. You know, as we go into this newest phase of terrible financial problems, you can see them in Britain erupting terrible future for many of us. We're also going to see illness probably meted out by these criminals through all kinds of means. I'm looking forward and seeing some awful events that these people are going to propagate. But how we can counter them, I believe, is with a widespread awakening throughout the world. And that means we have to look past our short-sighted goals of religious difference, and we have to start looking at each other as human beings and bringing the human family together to fight this evil. Because as long as we remain only Christians or only Muslims or only this or that group, we're never going to be able to take these people away from their crime wave. I don't believe.
Well, you know, Darrell, the Quran says, referring to Muhammad's victory over the Meccans, it says, truth has come and error has vanished, and then the passage concludes in Arabic with Inna al-batil kana zahukan. It is of the nature of error to perish, to vanish. So eventually I think the truth will prevail. And curiously enough, you know, these modern inventions, the fax machine, the internet, they are in fact breaking down the barriers that were imposed, because there only were about 6 news agencies in the whole world, you know, United Press, Reuters, and all the rest of it. So it was a very simple matter for the enemies of truth to control these news agencies in order to filter the information that gets through. So there were different levels of filtration. There was the level that we've spoken of the half a dozen news agencies. Then there is the level of state censorship. And then there is the level of the voluntary censorship that the newspapers and the media impose on themselves. But now all this is breaking down, and countries like Saudi Arabia, where people have been deliberately isolated by the dictatorship from knowing what goes on outside the frontiers of their country. People now, through satellite television, internet, well, in some countries like Syria, for instance, access to the internet is severely restricted, but they cannot restrict it entirely because the commercial prosperity of a nation depends on it. And facts that people, even in a closed mausoleum like Saudi Arabia, are beginning to think and ask questions.
Well, you know, it's going to take a unified world to fight them. I mean, you know, I'm doing this as a service to the future and a service to children unborn. Because as we get further into the conspiracy and their efforts to stop us, I have a sneaking suspicion we're going to revisit many of the horrors that were visited upon us in the last century, such as the starving of 30 million Christians in the Russian steppes, or such as, you know, murdering people in war like we did in World War One and Two. These are going to be back on our doorstep in no time at all.
Well, 6 million people died in the Ukraine famine alone, which was deliberately engendered by Stalin and his clique of murderers.
And isn't it interesting that these people all have roots to Judaism?
Well, Stalin's wife was Jewish. But if you read Father Fahey and you know his book, The Mystical Body of Christ in the Modern World, you realize that 80% of the first Supreme Soviet was Jewish.
Well, Andre Dickey, I have his book on my site, and he wrote very clearly that up until the Second World War, over eight out of ten of the people in important positions throughout the nation were Jewish. And
yeah.
many of them adopted Russian-sounding names, which maybe the next show we can talk about the concept of crypto-Jews, because the Murano cryptos in the United States Southwest and people like General Wesley Clark, who happens to be Jewish, or John Kerry, who sounds like a nice Irish boy, happens to be a Forbes Kerry Con.
Or McDonald's.
The McDonald's, or the, how about the this guy?
I mean, could be more Scottish than McDonald's. In fact, they're Jewish.
Well, you see, this concept of crypto-Jews needs to be understood because many people make judgments about who people are based on their last name, and in fact, they use that as a tool. You'll see it in Hollywood almost exclusively. There's a lot of educating to do out there, and there's a lot of things to discuss with this listening audience, and I hope you can come back and do it again with me. We are coming to the end of our hour, and I want to thank you for spending this time with me once again.
Well, I want to thank you for giving me this opening.
Well, you know,
it's always a pleasure to discuss these matters with somebody knowledgeable like yourself.
Well, it's actually an honor for me to be able to present this to this listening audience in this world. I take great pride in the work I'm doing because, without this kind of information, I think we're goners. And the other thing is that there's a humility to it, too, because, you know, this is not something I can do by myself. I can't do it with just you and I. We have to do it as a collected group that is empowered by truth. So, ladies and gentlemen, take this message and please spread it far and wide. Take the facts we have and check them if you wish. All of the things that I have said tonight and that Yakov or James Dickey has said tonight are checkable on my website at IamTheWitness.com, or just do your own due diligence. You'll find out that nothing we have said tonight is in any way fraudulent. It is all accurate and right to point. So, that being said, I want to thank you again, and I want to thank the listeners for tuning into this broadcast of The French Connection. And thanks again, Yakov. It was a wonderful interview.
Well, thanks, Darryl. I look forward to the next time.
It will be soon, my friend. Ladies and gentlemen, until the next time, look to your families. Take care of them. Prepare yourselves to understand these facts so that we can go together into the future and maybe create a better world for all of us in our future generations. This is my hope and my goal. And until the next time, this is Darryl Bradford Smith telling you all, please, be well.